You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan. Once again, he is remaining out. He is a DMP soft. I instead brought on Matt Moore of Hardwired Paroxysm and CBS Sports. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I can't complain. We carved up some pumpkins today, and I again went way too complicated and try to do the Dodgers logo, and I forgot that there's a floating like triangle in the middle there, so my wife got a nice laugh out of that.
Nice. I made a Frankenstein monster with vampire fangs, and my son was very impressed.
I would be as well. You're way better at that than I am. I struggled with two letters.
I'm okay with that. I've gotten better. I was really bad the first time, but when you have kids, you do it a lot. So I've gotten better at it the more I've done it.
Do you use a sketch out there, or do you just go by memory?
I don't sketch it on paper. I just draw on the pumpkin and carve around that. But I do designs. I don't do anything super complicated because I've tried to do super complicated ones before and they turn into disaster. the basic ones I can get pretty sharp looking.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. I trace it out as well on the pumpkin. It still somehow doesn't seem to help. I guess I too will hopefully get better with kids, because otherwise it's going to be a lot of laughing in the Irwin household. This has been Locked On Pumpkin Carving. We are going to talk about Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Julius Randle. We're going to switch things up a little bit. We don't talk about those guys nearly enough. As always, you can find the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Again, Matt Moore is here joining us. Thank you once again for joining us. We'll start then with Lonzo Ball. And I have a pretty good finger on the pulse of what people out here think of him, and it's all over the place. In terms of how he's viewed around the league that you've heard of so far, how's that vibe gone over?
It's interesting. I've asked around a couple of places, and the people I know have said the same phrase has come out, which is, he's going to be a good player. And I tried to push on, like, okay, what does that mean? and they won't really go into it. They're like, you know, he's going to be a good player. He's going to make an impact. He's going to be a guy they think that can help you win, but the question is what role is he going to play in helping you win? Like, is he going to be, you know, super? Is he going to be like number one player on the team, or is he going to be like, yeah, no, he can start on a really good team, or is he going to be somewhere in the middle, like kind of the point guard Kevin Love? Those kind of questions are still very much all over the place, because like, I have a lot of questions about him. I have a huge number of questions about him. I had him at UCLA, I had him in the draft process, I had him in summer league, and I have him now. None of those questions have been answered, and that doesn't mean that I know he's going to be bad. It's that I have questions I don't know the answers to that we're still waiting to find out. One executive commented to me that, and I because I suggested this, I may have been feeding him a little bit, because I was like, well, I just feel like the Lakers are making a mistake by cramming him down the team's throat. There's no real flow. It's just everything is Lonzo, 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 Lonzo. Yeah. And that's like, you know, they can't stop hearing about it. And they're like, the players are asked about him after every game, and like, yep, what he's doing and all these things. And then Magic's constantly talking about him. And that's before you get to his dad. And like, it's just this whole constant thing. And like, if I was on the team, like if I'm Brandon Ingram right now, I'm kind of like, really? Because I'm playing pretty well. Yep. And no one's really talking about me. And if I'm Julius Randle, I'm just like a volcano of anger. I'm just like, I am basically anger from inside out. That's just, I'm just, my head is exploding all the time because of my anger over this situation. So I have a lot of questions. And the executive, I asked him, do you think he's kind of cramming him down his throat? And they said, well, you know, it's better to have an idea of where you're going as an organization than sometimes to let things play out. And I was like, well, I hadn't really thought about that. So that, I kind of been mulling that over my head the last couple of days of wondering, you know, is it better for Magic to just kind of be like, look, this is Lonzo's team. You can get on board or you can get out. That goes counter to everything I kind of think about basketball. Like, I just don't ever think that that's a way you should approach anything. I kind of think of democracy as one of the few egalitarian kind of places where, yes, there are stars that come in, but look, if your team starts winning in a way that doesn't emphasize the star player, you should keep doing that, because like that's what matters. Like, whatever matters is what's going to help your team be the best it possibly can be, because that's supposedly the point of the sport. So I have a lot of questions about that, but that did kind of hang me up, the idea of like whether or not it's better to just have this plan of, we are doing this, like this is what we are doing, and whether that's beneficial or not.
It's interesting that you put it that way. My question, I mean, the obvious follow-up question is it innocent? Is this a matter of what Magic thinks is best for the team? Or is this something that he's doing to make himself look a little bit better? Because this was his big, this was his big move. This is his kid. This is the until if and when Magic or LeBron shows up or whomever shows up, Lonzo Ball is Magic Johnson's legacy so far, and I can't help but get away from, is he force-feeding us and force-feeding the team Lonzo Ball to try to do whatever he possibly can to get some kind of positive headline from a questionable run thus far? I'll say that.
Somebody that's... So he runs in league circles, but he's not with the team or the league itself.
Mm-hmm.
Said this to me because I was kind of curious about kind of what the how the Magic thing was going to go. And he said something interesting to me, which is he mentioned that he said the great thing about having Magic is that Magic doesn't have to prove anything to anybody because he's Magic Johnson. And like no matter what,
mm-hmm.
he carries that with him. And that insulates him from a lot of overthinking things. Like, so many executives are just nerve-wracked over every decision. And Magic doesn't have to be like that. My thing is, like, again, I don't know. Like, that's so counter to everything I am as a person that I don't know how to relate to that. Like, I don't know how to approach things where it's like, oh, you don't have to overthink something. You don't have to, like, constantly rack yourself over this decision. I don't know what that's like. But it sounded to him, like, and this is a pretty smart guy around the league, that was going to be a benefit. I don't think that there's any reason to suspect that – I don't think Magic Johnson needs promotion.
Yeah.
I don't think that he needs attention or credit. I think for him, it really is about – like these guys do get ideas in their heads of what's going to work, like what works in basketball. And the problem in the NBA a lot of times is that gets siloed in people's minds. There are a lot of coaches that are just like, no, if you want to win the NBA – you got to play this way. And, like, that's just categorically not true. There's a million ways to win in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are a million ways to win in the regular season in the NBA. There are less so in the playoffs, but that's a different matter. If you want to get there, there's a whole bunch of different ways to skin that cat. But I do think that this is very much an agenda-driven, you know, committing 100% to his guy. That this is his this is his person. This is the kid that he has decided to put the keys to. And there's not going to be anything standing in that kid's way. My thing is I think it's such a bad place for him right now with where his skill set is. I don't think he's in a position to do that. I think there are a lot of rookies that you could do that with. I just don't think Lonzo Ball is one of them.
Well, it's kind of interesting because the theory that I had with Harrison, I think it was a couple weeks ago at this point, the theory I had was when Magic Johnson was drafted, and it's a different situation, era, he was a different player, obviously. No matter how much he wants to talk about Lonzo Ball and all of the Showtime Lakers like to compare Lonzo to Magic, he was a very different player, and it was a very different circumstance than Lonzo Ball is currently in and Lonzo Ball currently is. But when Magic Johnson was drafted, they had Norm Nixon on the team. And then all of a sudden, Norm Nixon was gone. And I can't help but feel like with that D'Angelo Russell trade, that that was Magic kind of handling things the way he would have preferred things handled when he was a rookie and how things were eventually handled. And obviously, it led to a pretty good career for Magic. My only question to that thinking is that, I mean, that's not where basketball is currently. You don't, back then, you had one point guard who dominated the ball. And even with that Showtime team that got out and ran as much as it did, Magic had his fingerprints on the offense at all times. And you look at the teams that are around the league now, who runs that way? Nobody that's contending for a title runs the offense or runs their organization like that. So I just it concerns me that he's bringing antiquated philosophies into a very 2017 league.
And I just think it's going to stunt the other guys so bad. I mean, we're already seeing, like, Randall's just in such a bad place.
Mm-hmm. He's playing 19 minutes a game. Talented,
for a guy that's as talented as he is.
Yep.
You know, and I was worried in preseason when they were like, yeah, no, you don't get to bring the ball off the court. As soon as you rebound, you have to give it to Lonzo. I was like, well, that's just preposterous. Like, that's just stupid.
Yep.
Like, every big in the league now with any sort of handle, that's a massive advantage. If you've got a big that can get up the floor, if you have a big that can do that, you need that because it screws up transition defenses all over. Mm-hmm. Because nobody expects it. No, and the big is never going to come out to meet that guy to pressure them. So they're going to have passing lanes all over. If you have a guy like that that's got that kind of maneuverability, you need to definitely accentuate, and there's no reason that can't work with Lon. Like, I would actually rather be like, oh no, that's great, because if he's pushing the middle and ball comes up the left side, either Lonzo's going to get time for him to spot up and inevitably miss a wide open jump shot, or he's going to get time to catch the ball on the run, and then that's a great opportunity, right? It's like a transition one touch pass. Like, now you're putting Lonzo in a position to make a really flashy, high-value play, and that's something that Randall could have initiated, so it feels like he's running the offense, and it keeps guys involved. Like, that's a very positive experience. And so instead being like, no, grab it. And this is the other thing is, when you do that, you are inherently stopping the break, which you're obsessed with running fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your whole thing is pace. You just want to get up the floor. Okay. Well, you're not going to do that as effectively if you're like, no, we're going to stop and then hand the ball to the kid, and the kid will take it up, and then we'll go for it. No, like, don't do that. Like, the kid will get the ball. He'll be around. Trust him to be around. That's one of the best things about Lonzo is the kid's got an insane nose for the ball. He knows where to be in space all the time. So I don't know. There's just a lot of stuff about this that I think is concerning. But, you know, the other thing I do keep thinking is the counter argument to that. I talked about this with an assistant coach that I worked with a similar kind of situation a couple years ago. And one of the things that I was talking about is, I was like, it's almost like they've set him up to be too big to fail. And he's like, yeah, there are value. The coach was like, there's value to that. If you're basically just like, no, this kid is going to succeed. Like, we are just, no matter what, everything else can burn to the ground. But this kid is going to get better. Well, then you ensure the guy that you've basically banked on getting to where he's going to be. And I was like, but what if the guy that you did that with didn't work? And he was like, well, we would have been screwed. I was like, okay, well, all right then.
That's kind of terrifying.
That's the thing. Is, like, if you put all your eggs in one basket, and, you know, the Lakers wouldn't say that, I'm sure. Like, I don't have Lakers contacts, but, like, I'm sure the Lakers would be like, hey, look, you know, we're pushing Brandon. We believe in Brandon. You know, we believe in Julius. He's just struggling right now, which is not really true, but whatever. You know, we believe in Kuzma, and we believe in Nance. And we have all these guys that we're really invested in. It's just very evident whenever they're on the floor. There's a palpable tension whenever Lonzo's on the floor because the fans are waiting for him to do something, and the other players are waiting for him to do something, and the opponent is waiting for him to do something. It's like, there's just, like, this overarching tension every time Lonzo's on the floor. And then you take him off, and, like, the Lakers just play basketball, and then they're pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, they have guys that are good enough to just go out and play basketball. That's kind of the bummer here, is that their roster, it'd be one thing if this was the situation when Randall was first drafted and you had a roster full of minimum contract guys and 1 year contract guys and guys that you just knew weren't going to hang around. So it was just a matter of, well, Randall's just going to go out and do his thing. Unfortunately, that didn't play out that way because he broke his leg. But this isn't that situation. This is, Randall is a few months away from getting paid. Brandon Ingram is in his second season, and he's a second overall draft pick himself. Brooke Lopez is a legitimate NBA starter. KCP, same. And unfortunately, you have a bunch of guys who, I like how you put it, are just kind of being tethered to Lonzo, and it kind of turns Lonzo into a parachute when really he is supposed to be having the opposite effect. And you did. I mean, it's really tough early in the season because of how small sample sizes are, and one giant run will throw everything off. But the numbers kind of point to that a little bit, right?
Yeah, the numbers are. How can I put this? The numbers are horrifyingly bad. That's the best way to put it. They are an absolute horror show. So I think a lot of it is, if the Lakers were just bad, that would be one thing. If it was like, well, look, I mean, because here's the thing. Most rookies have bad point differentials, and that's how it's going to be. I have no doubt that, like, De'Aaron Fox and John Collins and all of these guys that have positive marks are going to be bad by the end of the year. It's just really hard for rookies to have positive net ratings. A big thing was made in Kevin Durant's first year about, like, well, look, he's supposed to be – like, Henry Abbott did this, and Henry Abbott's, like, a really smart, considerate dude. But he was like, well, look, KD's supposed to be this transcendent talent, but the Thunder are absolutely – or the Sonics were absolutely horrible with him on the court. And it happened 2 years in a row. It's like, look, they're just bad when he's on the floor. Because plus-minus was kind of like a nascent stat then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was before it kind of got disproved by a lot. More information came out.
Right. Well, but the biggest thing that we learned is just that rookies don't do well. It's just, like, this gets to – here's the thing. People wonder, like, well, how is it that, like, Raymond Felton has, like, a positive net rating, or, you know, like, Courtney Lee or these guys that clearly aren't as talented? It's like, look, if you're in the league for 5 years, you just pick up stuff. You pick up stuff on how to be ready for a game. You're stronger. You understand the endurance. You're used to it. You're not panicked. You're not – new defenders aren't flying at you. You're used to – like, you're able to remember, like, oh, that guy always goes at my right hand. You just have a wider knowledge base, and that helps you in a big way. If when you're a rookie, you don't know anything. You're just like a scared deer just skating around on ice trying to keep your balance half the time. And you make some good plays if you're really talented, and that's the case. But, like, the reality is that when Lonzo Ball's on the floor, the Lakers are 13 points worse than their opponent per 100 possessions. Mm-hmm. That's not a good stat. That's bad. Double digits is pretty bad. Even for a rookie, that's bad. That's actually not the concerning stat. The concerning stat is that in the 83 minutes that he has spent off of the floor, they are plus 11.3. It is one thing when you are a negative on a bad team. It's another thing when you're a negative and the team is actually pretty good when you're not on the floor. And that's reflected especially when you start doing lineup pairing. So, you know, Julius Randle he's only a 0.4 on court, and he's a minus 10.4 when he's off the floor. So it's a positive of 10.8. But the big difference is that when you have Brandon Ingram and Julius Randle, that combination absolutely kills everything except for when Lonzo Ball is on the floor. And then when Lonzo Ball is on the floor, it gets annihilated. And what people respond with is, oh, yeah, well, they play against the bench units. Thanks. Lonzo plays against starters. I'm like, okay, I understand that. But over the course of a game, if you actually pay attention to any sort of rotation, lineups do, like, they don't – in the regular season, they don't match up. You're not just like – the opposing coach isn't like, uh-oh, Lonzo Ball is coming back into the game.
It's not like line
back
one
in there,
versus
Kyle
line
Lowry.
One.
Like, that's not happening. Mm-hmm. So there's this mix of players that they're facing, and as a result, there's a lot of reasons to think that Lonzo's hurting them significantly. Now, that doesn't mean like Lonzo shouldn't play or that they should do something different with the rotation. Like, this is just part of it. But if we're going to talk about – especially my thing has been – we're going to talk about some sort of like Lonzo effect of like he just makes everybody better. And that's like no matter what happens, I read that from Lakers Twitter. It's like, oh, you could just tell. Like, these guys just know. And I'm like, they are literally getting slaughtered. It's just like, oh man, he feels so good about how this game is going as that person is impaling them. Like, it's like saying the goat in Jurassic Park is like, he feels really good about where this is going as the dinosaur is actively eating him.
Oh man, now you have me like thinking of Patrick Beverley as a T-Rex just gnawing on Lonzo Ball's
leg. He's definitely a velociraptor. Like,
oh
he
yeah,
is, He is 100%. DeAndre Jordan is much more the T-Rex.
So I guess the other night it was Rudy Gobert, right? Rudy Gobert was out there and he was just killing everything in sight. But the thing that I guess I have to come back to, and again, it's a question that I can't move myself away from, is this a Luke Walton decision, or is this a decision that kind of trickled down from up on high? Because those are two huge questions that the answers are going to say a lot about what Luke Walton's tenure is going to be like. And as we saw from Phil Jackson in New York, that kind of meddling behavior when you're dealing with a coach who's trying to do things his way doesn't work out very well for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably in line on this, and that's okay. Typically, even if management is like, don't do this, if a coach is in a certain situation, he'll be like, well, look, I thought this was okay to do this, you know, in this one. And that has been kind of the case. Like, they've stuck with the plan pretty much constantly. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're probably in line on this. I think the ball fits with how Walton wants to play. There's a lot of reason to think that, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you get the best version of Lonzo, that fits with what they want to do. He does dictate the way that they want to play. That makes sense. So there's all these ways that, like, I think it's in line. I don't think there's a disconnect, or if you're going to point to it, I don't think it's one area. I think it's the organization has aligned themselves as they're all in on Lonzo Ball. And that, again, the biggest reason that might work is that they are just not going to allow it to not work. You know, like, they're not going to allow it to fail. And that may just work for them. And that's not to say that Lonzo wouldn't have to work to get there or deserve, you know, that recognition. He would. But there are a lot of guys that in this league that have a lot of talent, and they aren't put in the best position, and that cracks them. And there's guys in this league that are put in great positions, and they don't put in the work, and that cracks them. And Lonzo's a kid that's obviously going to work, and he's being given every opportunity, and that's going to help him. Some of the best players in the league are the ones, and you know, if you want guys that have been put at that pedestal, look, not like the Cavaliers were like, no, LeBron, you're gonna have to earn it. Like, that's not how that went. Like, unless you were Ricky Davis, that's not what anyone thought. there are these other teams that have done that have just been like, no, this is this guy's team, and it's gonna be that guy's team no matter what. So there's ways that it can definitely work. It's not unheard of. The degree to which the Lakers are doing it is a little shocking to me, given where Ball's game is at. But on the other hand, if you're in their position and that's the best way to compete for a title long term, it makes sense.
Well, I guess the other, I guess, kind of elephant in the room is that they have bought into the idea that they're going to get a superstar this next summer. So a lot of the guys that are currently on the roster are just kind of stopgaps until they figure out how to clear up enough cap space to get those kinds of guys. So why invest in a Julius Randle, or why invest? I think they're still invested in Brandon Ingram, but why go all out to do whatever you possibly can for Brandon Ingram when LeBron shows up, or if LeBron shows up, he's probably going to be used to get veteran help anyway. So, I mean, I guess if that's all consistent with their thinking and they really honestly believe that that's something that they can do, then great. But, I mean, as you and I talked about in Vegas, we aren't 100% sold that that's something that they're going to be able to do anyway.
Yeah. And everyone I've kind of talked to has said the same thing, which is like, look, they're the Lakers. And guys love L.A. It's really fun to be a multi-million-dollar professional athlete in Los Angeles. It turns out that that's a fun experience to have. and there are benefits to that. So at this point, I can't say, no, I don't think something's going to happen. And I can't say I'm not in the, no, they're going to get it. Oh, they'll get a guy. I don't believe. And one of the reasons I don't believe it is you can't say, like, you'll know, I'll tell you this, the league will know if someone is going there in, like, by June 1st, May 1st. That's when the league will know, and it won't get to media, but the league will know at that point, like, what's going to go on. But mm-hmm. we are 6 months from that. And until we get there, there's really no way of being able to be sure of who's going to do what, and that includes LeBron. I've maintained this. LeBron is not a predictable actor. No. He's not wild. He doesn't throw you curveballs just to throw them. Like, he's not going to come out this summer and be like, I'm taking my talents to Charlotte. That, like, that's not happening. Yeah, I think it'd be awesome. Him and Kemba would wreck stuff, but that's not going to occur. He's not going to be like, you know what? It's time for me to go to Memphis and win a title with the Grizzlies. No, that, again, that team would be awesome, but not going to happen. But if you told me, if you said, I came back from the future, and I've come back to tell you where LeBron has signed, and after I asked you, that's stupid, why would you possibly send me that information? Please tell me what happened with indictments or North Korea or literally any other piece of relevant news and not what LeBron James did in free agency. But you said, no, I'm going to tell you this. If you did that and you said, you know what, on July 1st, LeBron announced he's joining the Spurs, I'd be like, yep, that sounds about right. And if you said, like, on July 1st, he negotiated a sign and trade to the Los Angeles Clippers for DeAndre Jordan, I'd be like, okay, that's going to be tough, but all right. And if you said he decided to join whoever in Houston, okay, cool. There's all these places that I can see them doing. And if you said, in the end, he just decided that he was ready for a challenge and really wanted to work on his business efforts as in the last part of his career, and so he decided to go to LA and really focus on his brand there, I'd be like, all right, that makes a lot of sense. They'll win some games. Cool. So there's a lot of ways that this could go. Russell Westbrook being off the market, I think, changes things a little bit. I think that changes things in a big way. I think there's a lot of talk of, like, well, Paul George and LeBron. Like, well, okay, those guys don't necessarily run in the same circles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Russ and LeBron are on a certain level, and so they have a familiarity with one another. And LeBron and Paul George know each other, but Paul George is not on that superstar level, so it's a little bit different. Now, if it's like Paul George and Melo are friends, and Melo's like, hey, I want to go to L.A., and Paul George is like, I'll go to L.A., and then Melo's like, hey, if you go to L.A., LeBron will come, then sure. But then you're talking about three max free agents. I don't know how they're going to make that work. So there's all these kind of things of ways it could go. And this is a long way of saying I don't know, but the point is that around the league, the sense is they're not going to count the Lakers out. No matter how much we talk about Lakers exceptionalism being dead, league insiders are never going to do that. People that work in the front offices are always going to be like, no, I'm always terrified of a team that operates in LA.
It's interesting that the Clippers don't get as much of that, but yeah, I mean, it is different brands. And different things going on there. I guess the way I've always put it is the only person who is objectively wrong is the person who says they know what LeBron is going to do, who adamantly says, no, LeBron isn't going to LA. No, LeBron isn't going to Houston. It's right. If you honest to God think that you objectively know what LeBron James is going to do, then give me whatever you're smoking, because it must be lovely.
Just, again, I just get back, and this is the same for all these free agents where, look, imagine the Clippers, and they got waxed by the Warriors tonight again, but, like, let's say the Warriors put together some sort of magical season run, and all of a sudden it's like they made the Western Conference Finals, and no, you know, they took two games off of the Warriors, and in that third game they were down, like, they were up two, and KD hit a full court shot. Like, something crazy like that happens. Well, all of a sudden LeBron's like, wait, so that LA team is, like, right there? Okay. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all of these ways that things can go. If Chris Paul gets back and Houston takes off and it's really great and the vibe is awesome, and Paul's like, look, you can come here. You don't have to handle the ball. You can play 30 minutes a night and rest your body, and then we'll just kill teams in the playoffs and have a wide open system. That's going to sound pretty good to him. Like, there's all of these things that can change between now and then. And the same is true for Paul George and all of these other dudes. And the other thing I think, though, is interesting is even though they're so committed with Ball, you know that if they get a major free agent on the line, they won't worry about fit. Like, it'll just be like, no, we'll just figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we'll just figure this out later, which I don't know how that's going to go. But that is one of the approaches of this very general philosophy that the Lakers seem to have is like, nope, Lonzo Ball's the guy, is they're not really committed to system or approach or fit. They're just like, nope, we're just going to build the best team and Lonzo's going to be part of it.
Yeah, it's the system is Lonzo Ball right now until further notice. It's how I would probably put that. I wanted to get back to Brandon Ingram really quickly because he has kind of fallen by the wayside. And I put together a really short thread on Twitter the other day, and I was talking about how the Lakers have kind of mismanaged their way through this rebuild, and how you can tank all you want and you can put together all the high-end lottery talent that you want, but at the end of the day, if you don't develop them properly and you don't put these kids in the right places to succeed, it's not going to really work out very well for you. And I started with Randall, and then he got hurt, and his de facto rookie season coincided with D'Angelo Russell's rookie season, which coincided with the Kobe farewell tour, and then Kobe is gone, and Ingram comes in, and Ingram is this bright and shiny toy that they focus on, and Randall and Russell kind of fall by the wayside, and then now Lonzo is here, and it's that same effect to the nth degree. And I guess my concern here with Ingram, who has been solid, right? He's been way better than I thought Brandon Ingram would be at this point in the season. And yet nobody is talking about it because LeVar Ball guaranteed that the Lakers wouldn't lose two games in the same week.
Yep. Like, I would just be – I mean, and Ingram, maybe that's the credit of Ingram not being brash and loud, is that Ingram's not going to be like – what the hell? Like, he's not going to, you know, come out here and try and compete for attention. He's just going to go out and play. And that's what he's done. He's been better, and he's been great. He's been really good. He's been their best player by far. He's excellent. And he's showing a lot of good things. And the best thing I think about is, like, he's playing really well to start the season. And even if he comes back a little bit, and even if you look at him and you say, like, well, he takes a lot of mid-range, and his game is very simplistic. Okay. But there's a building block right there. Like, there's a very nice base. Like, if last season was just about getting his body where it needs to be, like, now his body is better and his game is more in control. And now he can start building in team concepts. And that's, I think, going to be really beneficial to him. I always think that, like, Kawhi is the ideal way to go about it. Like, I wish Andrew Wiggins had been in Kawhi's role where, you know, the Spurs were just like – and Wiggins was a totally different prospect coming out. I get that. But, like, the Spurs went to Kawhi and were like, look, all we want you to do is defend and hit this corner jumper. That's all we need you to do. Just make sure you can hit this corner jumper. We want you to work obsessively to hit this corner three. And he did that, and teams started closing out on him, and they said, well, okay, can you pump fake and drive in? Okay. He had that. Okay. Can you take the ball if they close out and they try and trap you? Can you dribble out of it and run a pick and roll with it? Okay. All right, well, now – can you post up? And so they just layered stuff on top of it, but it all started with play good defense, hit the corner three. And if you just, like, build this baseline, that gives you time to, like, workshop with assistant coaches your game and build things up as opposed to try and be everything at once. And with Ingram, I think that one of his things is, like, he's just, like, last season he was just throwing darts at a dartboard, right? Yep. Like, I'm like, this move and that move, and now it's like, all right, he's settling and he's got – like a system that he's starting to put together. And in coming years, like, he can really fit into a role, but that's going to be one of the kind of the hard things, is they got to figure out kind of what their identity is. This team still doesn't have an identity. And they're not going to. Like, Lonzo's not good enough to be able to dictate a style yet. And they're going to have to figure out that stuff as they go, and there's time, and that's what's promising still about them no matter what. But those are the kind of things that are nice. But it's still exciting that he's building these layers of his game on. I think that's going to help him long term.
Yeah, I like how you put that, and it was kind of one of the frustrating things from last year, and then it started to carry over a little bit into some of the comments that we heard in the offseason, where last year it was, well, for a stretch, Brandon Ingram was going to play point guard, and then for a stretch, Brandon Ingram is going to focus on this, and then for a stretch, and it was just broken up into these segments, and like you said, it was just throwing mud at the wall and hoping something stuck. And then this offseason, Magic went on his media tour and talked about how he expects and would be disappointed if Brandon Ingram doesn't score 20 points a game, 15 to 20 points a game. And then, you know, you saw it in the first night where he just put his head down a bunch, and he was going up against Wilson Chandler was in the preseason. He was in the preseason. But you saw it in the first night against the Clippers where he just put his head down a bunch, and he was going up against Danilo Gallinari, who isn't any kind of defensive stalwart, but he is a big dude. He is a grown man, And Ingram, I just felt like, was banging his head up against the wall. And what I've kind of liked in the stretch that he's picked his game up is, like you talked about, they made things a lot more simple on him. It's just, all right, shoot a three, or you got two dribbles off of a closeout, and maybe once or twice per game we'll put you in full isolation. But they've tried to limit that, or it looks like they've limited it that as much as they possibly can, because that's not who he is yet. I mean, it'd be insane if a 19 or 20 year old player was that. So I guess my long winded question here moving forward is, all right, you got two. They have Lonzo as a blue chip asset because they look at him as, like you said, too big to fail. Ingram looks like he is heading in that same direction, but I could see them moving him if the right guy shows up and he asks for the right kind of help. Aside from that, the roster is like this amoeba that could do literally anything. And do you think that's the right kind of circumstance for guys like Ingram or Lonzo to develop?
Yeah, because none of those guys are good enough to demand touches away from Lonzo outside of Brook.
Mm-hmm.
So Brook's an excellent complement to him because he's a post-up guy that if it's like, all right, we really need a bucket now, Brook can go down and post up and be like, give me the ball. And most of the time they're going to run 1-5 pick and pop, and that's great because Brook's excellent at it. And he helps with defense, and he's a smart player, and he's not an alpha dog, and he's not going to like get up anybody's grill, and he's just going to like he's going to show up, he's going to work hard, he's going to make his money, he's going to go home. Mm-hmm. And he's happy. He's never going to complain. And that's really good. They don't have guys on that team that are going to make a lot of noise about problems, and that's good. I think it's a real blessing to have guys like Kuzma there and Nance that are better than expected for it to be a situation where they're just like happy to be getting opportunities at this point. Like, this is just like a goal that, like, wow, people are like, I'm an NBA player, and people are like aware of what I'm doing, and I'm getting recognition for it. And that's, you know, and I'm doing it for the Lakers, which makes things a lot easier. All of those things I think are beneficial for them. I think that they're surrounded. I mean, look, you know, Jordan Clarkson is kind of settling into his identity, which is, you know, Clarkson's going to get moved, and he's probably going to be wind up as, you know, if he grows into his defense, which he didn't have a lot of years to do that, but if he grows into the veteran defense stuff when he's like 27, then he'll wind up as like a Courtney Lee type. Like, Courtney was pretty great defensively early on, but he can be that type of player. Or, you know, Clarkson will be, in the worst case scenario, he'll wind up as like, God, I can't even think.
Like Jamal Crawford, but like old Jamal Crawford.
Yeah, and I'm not even as good. And not like Eric Gordon, because Eric Gordon's excellent. I'm trying to think of like a standard rotation two guard, but basically just that, like a standard rotation two guard that just kind of fills out a veteran roster. Mm-hmm. And just kind of plugs away. And he'll do that, and that's fine. And, you know, he may make a jump and all of a sudden be a really great scoring presence, but I don't think Clarkson's future is on the Lakers. I don't think Randall's future is on the Lakers. I don't know what Kuzma is yet. We got a long way to go there. It's just, it's really early.
He's an MVP candidate. I don't know what you're confused about.
Right, exactly. I mean, other than the Hall of Fame, I don't know. I don't know what to say there.
You mentioned Randall's future, and you talked about guys who just kind of quietly accepted their role while it's the Lonzo Ball show. Randall doesn't seem too thrilled about doing that kind of thing. He's already had one instance this year where he was subbed out for a big possession of the game, and he actually laughed about it. I believe that was Pete Zayas of Laker Film Room tweeted that while he was there at the game. And the tough part about moving Randall is that he's about to be a restricted free agent. So does a team want to give up an asset, or give up what the Lakers want is cap flexibility to acquire somebody who they have to pay without all that much knowledge about what he could be? So what do you think, where do you think Randall, if you had to bet on it, where do you think Randall winds up, and what do you think the Lakers net in return for him?
I can't answer that. And the reason I can't answer that is in part, I've gotten a surprisingly just dismal review of him from scouts. Just
wow,
really negative. Because I'm really high on him. I think a lot of it is that the pro scouting hasn't been I haven't talked to many of the pro scouts lately. Or that since they've seen the Lakers, right? So like they haven't seen like this year's version of Randall. And one of the things is Randall is actively better on defense this year.
Absolutely.
And if you want to scream to the heavens that he's not good, well, look, like the Lakers are pretty good on defense, and Randall's better, and that's all it is. Like he's better defensively. So I think scouts have to kind of see that. But everyone I've talked to has just been like, yeah, I don't know, I wasn't crazy on him. Like the wingspan gets brought up a lot. And it's like, well, look, if he's not, he's not a stretch four, and like he's not like a true stretch four. And he's undersized, and he's got short wingspan. Like, what's his identity in the modern NBA? Like, where am I going to play him? What am I going to, what would he do on our team? I think it's a situation where he'll wind up somewhere that's like low value. That's just like, oh, we can take him on because we need the talent, and then he'll wind up having a really great run. I just think Julius Randle's going to be a good NBA, not even a good. I think he's going to be a great NBA player,
wow.
Not like a superstar, but like Julius Randle's damn good. And he's good in a lot of areas, and he showed all of that Kentucky, and he showed that in the NBA, and he's worked hard to get where he is, and just there's a lot of reasons to bet on Julius Randle. I think people are underselling him, so I think that he'll wind up in a small market somewhere. He'll wind up being kind of brought in as like, yeah, we'll see kind of how it goes, and then he'll wind up taking off in the right situation if he lands in it.
Does he kind of feel like the perfect Grizzly? I kind of feel like he'd be great in Memphis.
I don't say that because I'll get called a homer. He is very much of the Memphis mindset.
He
would do like I started thinking the other day about what a Jamichael Green Julius Randle swap would look like.
Mm-hmm.
His athleticism, the toughness, the dog in him, all of that stuff. Now he doesn't space the floor as well as Jamichael Green does, and that's a problem. But his whole dog attitude fits very well with what Memphis does.
It would
be a fit. Honestly,
that was my starting point. He just feels like somebody. The play that sticks out to me. I think he was again de facto rookie because he played 15 minutes in his first season. But it was in his first year, and I believe it was either Zach Randolph or Boogie Cousins. I think it might have been Boogie Cousins got up in his grill, and he didn't back down at all. And nope. that was when I was like, okay, all right, this guy is going to figure it out at some point, and hopefully it's in Memphis because I think those fans out there would love him.
Yeah, all of his synergy numbers are also excellent. Like, he's just through the roof in terms of efficiency on everything. He's such a good passer, and you need that in today's NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're four, everybody wants their four to spread the floor, but if you got a passing four, and Draymond's the obvious one, but it's just a guy that if you pass the ball to out of the roll in the high pick and roll, can dribble and then effectively punish the defense for whatever decision they make. So, if they trap the ball handler and he gets it on the short roll and the guy comes off the corner and that guy can whip the pass off of the sidearm directly to the corner for a 3-point shot, that's a high value play.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he can do that, or if the defender stays home because he's worried about that and he's got the lane and that guy can just drive and dunk the way that Randle can, it's hugely valuable. Like the array of options that Julius Randle gives you in a high pick and roll situation are very valuable regardless of how good of a long-term shooter he's going to be.
And we talked about the transition stuff earlier in the show, but my favorite play that any Laker made last year regularly was Randle getting a rebound and dribbling at a shooter's defender and just bulldozing him and handing the ball off. And usually it was Nick Young or Lou Williams would just have a wide open three in transition because he figured that out. And that's the other thing about Randle is that every year he's been in the league, he's added or tried to add something and tried to visibly get better. And the guy who a lot of Laker fans like more than him out here, Larry Nance Jr., hasn't done the same thing. And that's kind of it's kind of too bad that Randle's contract situation is what it is, because I don't necessarily want the Lakers to trade both him and D'Angelo Russell in the same calendar year and watch both those guys progress elsewhere while the Lakers hand the keys over to somebody who may not necessarily be ready to have the keys to an organization yet.
Yeah, and just like let him develop and share the ball, like have them grow up together. That's mm-hmm. the ideal, right? Is that you have three have these guys that are just like, no, like we all came up together and we all, you know, there's enough to go around. And if Lonzo is such a great passer, which he can be, then it should be easy. It shouldn't be like, you know, there's not room. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a playmaker. That's his whole thing. So if that's the case, you know, let them share it a little bit. Yeah, and it's, I think it's weird. The perceptions are just so different because, like James Herbert, who's my colleague at CBS, he and I were debating the Lakers in the preseason, and he basically what came down to is I was like, well, at this point, I was like, Randall's their second best player, and he was like, he's their third best power forward.
Yeesh.
He was like, it's Kuzma and Lance and Nance and then him. And I was like, get out of here. Like, get out of here immediately. Get out of here and never come back. And I still kind of feel that way. Where, like, everything with Larry Nance, I'm just like, okay, cool. I mean, he's fine. He's like a good – like, he's a guy that, you know, is going to give you good minutes in a rotation. I love his energy. I love the effort that he plays with. But I never see anything from Larry Nance Jr. that I'm like, oh, man. But the skill level of Julius Randle, on the other hand, is off the charts. Now, like, Kuzma is just like – slaughtering universes right now, so it's like a whole other deal. We'll see if that holds. If it does, then that changes things. You know, like Kuzma can make him legitimately expendable, but as it stands right now, you know, I just look at Julius Randle's his pedigree, his combination of skills, and again the mindset. Like, this is the reason I liked Randle so much is when I was doing scout work on him. I went to Kentucky. I was just like, this kid is a dog. Like, he just
absolutely.
He's and the, all right. That phrase gets overused. Here's a more creative one. I just noticed that there were plays where he was just this rabid Wolverine that was just tearing the ball out of guys' hands and wanted to win so badly. And if you put athleticism plus that kind of attitude and then the ability to handle, that's a player I want on my team.
He's made a couple plays this year that were such blatant offensive fouls because he just put his shoulder into the chest of a defender, put his head down, and then just by standing back up, the defender wound up in like the fifth row somewhere, that I'm convinced the referee that should have been calling that foul, their mouth fell agape and the whistle fell out, and it was just like, I can't believe he just made a grown man move like that. And it just comes from an attitude that not every NBA player has, and it's a good place to start. And then you combine that with the skill level that he has, and again, I've spent way too much time on ESPN's trade machine, and I spend a lot of time moving Julius Randle because I know that's what the Lakers are probably looking to do. And it's just depressing because they could move this guy, and like I said a second ago, they could move D'Angelo Russell, and then 5-10 years from now, we could look back and say, holy crap, what they could have had. I mean, I'm saying it already. They could have, because everybody makes the fallacy of thinking that they couldn't get Kuzma, but they could have just drafted him the pick after they wound up getting. So they could have had Russell, Lonzo, Kuzma, Randall, and then, you know, it would have been Mozgov, but that could have become anybody. And, you know, those four guys would be a lot of fun. Or Ingram slides in there at the three, Kuzma slides down to the four, and Randall slides into the five, and you have a legitimately really fun five-player lineup that probably gets slaughtered more often than not because they're all really young, but that'd be really fun. And if the Lakers are going to be bad anyways, and while the Golden State Warriors rip everybody's souls 50 million times over, why not have a really fun lineup that you could trot out there every night? That's kind of the bummer in looking at the Lakers now and what they could have been before.
I agree 100%.
All right, well, that is everything that I wanted to talk about. I like to end on a lighter note. I sent out a tweet tonight and it made me think because Steph Curry was going up against Patrick Beverley, and I was thinking to myself, like, what would happen if Del Curry said the stuff that pissed off Patrick Beverley the way LeVar Ball did? And if you could find, I'm putting you on the spot, but if you could find, you know, a random pairing of parents who would like go at each other on Twitter that would make the most people just, you know, quote unquote, end Twitter. Where would you go with that? You have all of NBA history to work with.
Of parents of NBA players.
Yeah. Hyken replied to me with Papa Nurkic and LeVar, which I would be a little bit worried for LeVar's personal safety.
Yeah, that's a Bosnian cop. That conversation would be short. Let's see the best one to go with it. They like Draymond's mom, like she yells a lot. Like she yells in my mentions a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But like she doesn't ever actually like step over the line or like say anything really offensive.
Yeah.
Like I really think that like Draymond's mom has genuine like good intentions at heart. She just loves her son.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one that would probably end the universe would have to be God, he's been like insane. Kyrie's dad. And a really crazy one.
JaVale's mom?
Yes. That's a good fill in. Yes.
Kyrie's dad and JaVale McGee's mom. It needs to happen.
And Kyrie's dad is like pretty is pretty normal. I just like the idea of like him having to defend his son's flat earth takes.
Well, and you know, people asking if LeBron was a father figure. Like, did Kyrie's dad ever come back? And I know Kyrie said, like, I have a dad. But did Kyrie's dad ever say anything about that you recall?
Not that I recall, no. I think, to me, it's going to be more entertaining when the NBA. Like, I'm more excited about LeVar feuding with various NBA players. Like, I need the Lakers to get good because I want a Draymond LeVar beef.
Yeah.
I really want it. Because like what will happen is they'll start with JaVale. And then Draymond will be like, all right, whoa. And then KD will like try and get in on it, and then it'll just seem lame, and then there'll be like fake accounts being like, way to burn him, KD. And
yes. Like that. Devin Courant is like, what the hell, guys?
that'll be really awkward. And then, I don't know. Well, I'll say this, man. You got the win over Wall. I was shocked. I thought Wall was going to tear him into pieces. I thought John was going to destroy him, and John went to pieces. Like John just fell apart.
Yeah. Like, well, they had the night before in LA.
I'm telling you, this is what I keep saying. Lakers fans get so mad too. They're like, just don't give us any credit. I was like, you get credits. You still beat a team that's hung over that's better than you. You still get credit for that.
It's still our city. Like, it's why wouldn't you want any competitive advantage? Like, why wouldn't you want to cop to that?
Look, there's a reason why every team that goes to Toronto on Sunday morning has to play and is like, oh, God, why are we here? Like, oh, you have 17 turnovers in the first quarter and you've missed you're 3 of 24 from the field. Wonder what you did last night.
Toronto, huh? I would have never guessed Toronto.
Are you kidding me?
I've never been. I don't really.
Yeah, no, let me tell you. Like, Toronto is my understanding, because I do not attend such establishments. because I am happily married with two great kids and I have no money. But my understanding is that of all the cities, Toronto's adult establishments are above and beyond everywhere else's.
Wow.
They are the gold standard. Like in LA, I think it's legitimately like you have so many options. It's like, oh, we can go get like a great meal. Mm-hmm. And then we can go to a club and there's like an after party and there's a celebrity spots and like all of this stuff. And then there's like some cities that are just like, no, it's just a party town. Like Miami, Toronto, Atlanta.
I can't wait till a team moves to Vegas and we get to see what Vegas does to people on a Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon game.
I still don't believe it'll ever happen, and I have actually stronger reason to believe that over the summer. There were conversations that the league office has held about various events being held there, and they are still so skittish after the All-Star game.
Yeah,
it was so bad. Talking to like any member of the service community in Las Vegas about the All-Star weekend a couple of years ago, and they just like they have trauma over it.
Start shaking.
Yeah, so it's funny. The year before Grit Grind took off. So this is like probably 4 months before Zach Randolph was traded to Memphis. The premier
adult establishment that was absolutely legendary. That, like, people in my tiny town in Northwest Arkansas would whisper about. There was a club in Memphis that was notorious for the wild, wild things that would go on there. It closed down. It was shut down. And I've always joked that if that place had still existed, then Grit Grind would have never taken off. The Grizzlies would have never survived that place still being in operation.
It would have just been Grind. Like, it wouldn't have been...
Oh, not necessary.
All right, I think it's probably time to end it on that note. I greatly appreciate you coming on the show with us, especially at this hour. Anything that you want to plug moving forward?
Oh, what am I working on this week? I'm working on reasons why your surprising team is actually going to fail and you're going to be sad again. I haven't decided whether the Lakers will be included in that or not, so you'll have to check back to see. I'm running it tomorrow. We'll see how I feel about the Lakers then.
Is anybody honestly surprised by the Lakers? Like, I feel like the Lakers are what the Lakers were going to be. Like, they,
I think they're a little better. I mean, I'm on, look, how many wins do they have right now? What, three?
Three, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, right now, honestly, they have three more wins than I thought they would. So, like, they're no, I thought they beat the Suns, but like, they're doing better than I thought. They are legitimately better than I thought they would be. And then every Thursday on CBS Sports, you can find the Inbounds, which is going to be my weekly column that bounces around the league and shows little plays I see and little stats that I find. And it's not really an observation; it's a little bit deeper than that. It's stuff that I've heard or I've seen, and it's all the stuff that you can catch as far as what's going on around the league.
And that's on CBS Sports.
That's on CBSSports.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much again for hopping on with me. And maybe at some point this week, Harrison, I'll let him back on the show. But for right now, everybody, tune in, as always, on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Matt Moore. We'll talk to you guys soon.